All right, Israel Alcoholic again. And we have a really good speaker lined up for you tonight. He is, his home group is the Tuesday Night Friends of Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And he made me write that down, so be sure to get it right. He said his favorite saying, he's got a couple, but the ones that he told me tonight were pray about it, because he tells everybody that. And then he tells them again. And pray or be pray. And finally, he's got 14 years of sobriety, guys. Please give it up for Jerry the Weenie Alcoholic. And he made me call him that.
Hello, I'm Jerry, and I am a weenie alcoholic. And I claim that because every time I drank, I either passed out. I was the first one to pass out, get sick, or you know, all the weenie stuff. I never remember getting home and stuff, but I'm glad I don't do that anymore. I remember driving home now. It's great. I started drinking when I was about 14, 15. I spent 35 years out in my drinking career. And I always call alcohol the gateway drug to others. Had some other outside issues. But, you know, they went by the wayside in 1991 when the federal government intervened with that one because they started random drug testing anybody with a Class A license. So all the other issues had to go by the wayside, but as long as you weren't caught drinking and driving, that was okay. So, get back to the beginning. You know, like I said, I started out very young, you know, and this is how progressive it is. Weekends, 3 days a week, and then all every day, every week. And it seemed like I had, everywhere I worked, I worked with people that liked to drink almost like I did. So, you know, it was a good time. But did wait till after work was over, and then we'd start drinking. I was really amazed I never got a DUI. Every time I drank, I broke out in car keys. And I don't know how many times I talked my way out of it, or, you know, just left the scene of an incident, and they catch up with me a little bit later after I'd sobered up and have a hell of a story for them and never got in trouble for it. But, you know, I'm just amazed I never did it. Like I said, I drove truck for a living, and I was intervened to come into this program. Let's see. Actually, at the end of November, because I got a big old fat letter in the mail. It was from my son's mother, and she said I was drunk and irresponsible on my visitation days. So she took me back to court, and I was sentenced to a six-month outpatient program, a whole bunch of AA meetings a week. And, you know, I'm kind of glad I did thank her for it one day. You know, I was driving back from a meeting of Isaiah one day, and she called me and tried to tell me everything I had. This is after I got my son back in my life. She's telling me all his appointments and everything that afternoon. I said, I know what I have to do. She said, oh, and then she was quiet for a while. I said, oh, are you done? And she didn't, and she said, yeah. And then she was quiet again for a long time. I said, oh, by the way, thank you. Instant silence. And I was thanking her for intervening to get me here because, and I swear to God, she was so quiet, almost heard the angels singing in heaven that day. But, and that was the only day she was ever that quiet. But, you know, I was really happy I got into the program, although I struggled a little bit at first with some of the steps. But, let's see. I always knew I was an alcoholic because I drank alcoholically from probably year 10 to year 35. You know, drank twice, 2 to year 1. But I was glad I never got to the point of physical or mental dependency on the alcohol, because like I said, I was driving truck. One DUI would have ruined everything. When I first got into this program, you know, I was sitting in the Alano Club in the back. I'm not a drunk like her. I'm going to get my kid back after this outpatient program. I'm not a drunk like him. I still have a job. And you know, it took a while. I like to use the analogy of just leaning over, putting one hand over her ear. And instead of everything that was being said going through, it started bouncing around inside my head a little bit. And I came to the realization that had she not intervened for me to quit when she did, I could have been like everybody I was comparing myself to. So I started looking at similarities, and, you know, if she hadn't intervened and I hadn't completed the outpatient program, I wouldn't have had my son back in my life when he was 18 and decided whether or not he wanted to come visit with me. When DUI, I would have lost my job. How do you make mortgage payments without a job? I'd had a reserve spot underneath one of the overpasses. And, you know, it's just all those things that I finally started listening to that made a difference. So I got a sponsor, started the steps, and, you know, that's when everything started turning around, you know. I've admitted I was alcoholic before I ever quit drinking, and my life was very unmanageable, or I wouldn't be in these rooms right now. You know, I didn't say, damn it, I just don't want to drink no more, and decided to come here. I was basically forced to come in here, but it was a good thing, because I always knew I needed to quit. I just never knew what day that was going to be. Well, that day was defined for me by his mother. And, you know, so I got in, I started doing the stuff. It took about 3 months to get step three down. When I finally learned how to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand them, that's when the 180 was completed. You know, I still had little struggles here and there, but when I finally learned how to do that, the 180 was completed, and life got better just about as soon as that one was done. So, yeah, and, you know, I couldn't believe how much money I was wasting on alcohol, because as soon as I quit, you know, the pennies and nickels turned to dimes and quarters to dollars, and damn, that's a $10 bill in my pocket. I couldn't believe how much money I was spending on it. And, you know, kind of glad the government intervened in all the outside issues, because I was spending a lot of money there, too. I'd still been broke. But this program's really done a lot for me. I'm glad I got the steps done. You know, 1, 2, and 3, the admissions phase, I had no problem admitting it. And I always had a belief in God. But the belief I had was religious. And I liked the spirituality in this program. And I was sitting in it was before a book study meeting started one day. And me and another guy were talking. And I actually looked up the difference between spirituality and religion on my phone. He said, religion is somebody else's conception of God, and they're trying to teach you their conception. And spirituality is your own conception of God. And I like that one so much better. You know, I still go to church with my mother every Sunday when I'm in town, but I combined the two gods that I knew. You know, the religious one and the spirituality one, because spirituality one is a hell of a lot more forgiving than the religious one is. And I like that a lot. But, man. Should be used to this planet. So, you know, I started, I got the steps done. Still went to, I was still working, so I went 3 meetings a week. Yes. I was voted in for a secretary position on my 6-month birthday. And I probably held that position for 9 freaking years because I couldn't get anybody to step up and take over. In fact, that Tuesday night meeting, I was building a very big resentment towards having to be there all the time and open the doors. When my son was going to be in a play at school, and the only night they were going to have it is Tuesday night. And this was before I knew I could depend on other people to open the doors for me. So, you know, I was talking to the teacher and said, Tuesday the only night? She said, yes. Damn, I got a meeting I got to go to. She goes, what kind? I told her it was an AA meeting because I'm not embarrassed to be part of this group, these groups. So she proceeded to tell me about some of her family members had to go to AA. Some of them helped and some of them didn't. But right before she was done talking, she goes, well, maybe it's God's way of having you help people that really need it. And I'll be damned if that resentment wasn't lifted immediately, but underneath my breath, I was, bitch, I did not want to hear that. But the resentment was lifted, and, you know, I started thinking about it later. And if I just walked away, handed the keys back to the to the pastor there at that church. That would have been one less meeting in Schlary. And, you know, that door could have been locked today. Somebody needed to be there. So, you know, it gave me a new perspective and a new outlook on what I had to do. But also, about that time, I started picking up sponsees. And you know what's the easiest thing to do when a sponsee gets 6 months? You're taking over the meeting. So, you know, I got out of that for a while. But, you know, I'd bounce between Sundays, Saturdays, and Tuesdays of secretary in that meeting. Now, you know, I'm retired now, so pretty much anytime somebody has to go somewhere, Dean, cheer, you can use it. All right. You know, thank God it's not a habit. It's also fishing season, so there's some days I cannot go because I'd rather be out on the boat fishing. But, it's really good. After you get your steps done, you feel confident enough in the program to work with others. Because, you know, first couple of years, I didn't want to work with others. I didn't know enough about it myself. I never want to admit that I know everything there is to AA, and that's like, you know, I go anywhere from 7 to 9 meetings a week. And it's because I want to stay teachable. Every time I go to a meeting, I learn something new. I hear something somebody share that sticks. And because if I ever come into a meeting and I think I know it all, just shoot me right there. Because, you know, that'll be the beginning of the end for me. You know, I got rid of most of my fears. I have one healthy fear now, and that's fear of the first drink, because I've seen what happens to people to go out again. You know, sometimes they don't make it back in, sometimes they die. But, and sometimes they just keep coming in and out, in and out, you know, playing yo-yo or something. But, you know, at least they're coming back and there's a willingness. And then after a while, you see the light come on behind their eyes and they finally start getting it. And that's what I really like when I help people, to see that light come on in their eyes. They're getting the program. They're understanding it better, and they're working it better. You know, I work the steps to the best of my ability. And, you know, I know I'm only happy today contingent on my spiritual condition daily. The first couple of weeks of February, I was sick. I got the COVID. And I got out of the habit of my morning meditations, my morning readings, and praying day and night. My sleeping habits were all jacked up. But I got out of the habit. Some old behavior started coming back. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was cussing worse than a sailor thought he could cuss. And before we hung up the phone, she said, "You sure are cussing a lot." And I apologized to her, and we said goodbye, and I immediately did a 10th step. That's what I love about these steps. You can figure out what the heck's wrong. So I immediately did a 10th step and came to the conclusion that while I was sleeping off and on all day and all night, not paying attention to what the hell I was doing, getting restless, irritable, and discontent, I was not doing my meds, and I wasn't praying day and night. And as soon as I came to that realization and I started doing it again, you know, life got better again. I was serene and happy again. So I know what can happen if you don't stay in the steps or stay with constant contact with your higher power. Israel was saying, I do always tell people to pray about it. But, you know, one of my friends in a meeting one time, he brought it to my attention and said, he goes, "You never said meditate." And you know, that's the other half of praying about it. You pray and ask for his guidance, but if you don't meditate, listen for what he's going to tell you, you ain't never going to get it. So I started adding that part into what I tell people now. And I like to be able to, when people come into AA, you know, first couple of times, they look kind of lost and stuff. And you can tell the ones that haven't worked the steps yet. And I like to pick them out of the crowd and ask them if they'd like to work the steps. When they say yes, you know, it elates me and because every time I help somebody get through the steps, it's just like me doing my steps again. And I don't know how many times I've helped somebody with the steps. Another amends comes up I got to make. Or, you know, if something in the four step comes up, and I have to go out and take care of it immediately because that's what we do. And, you know, it's fun to go out and do things now. So I remember getting home. I have a good time. Yeah. No, being sober 14 years and you only talk 20 minutes, that sucks, huh? But, you know, I like the friends you get in AA because they're the real friends that you never had while you was out there doing other things. Because these friends you get here will come when they say they're going to come and not expect anything for themselves. And I remember too many times back in the days, you gotta come, you come help me this, what do you got? So, you know, and then as soon as it was done, they sucked. But, you know, I have a lot more fun now and I'm sober. And, yeah, I'm in a room. Oh, wait a minute. The wreckage by drinking cause. In my drink career, I wrecked 5 vehicles and 3 marriages. Imagine that, drunk like me. But, you know, and that's why I was amazed I never got a DUI. And, you know, marriages come and go. Well, they did for me anyway. I'm not going to say it was all my fault, but a lot of it was, because I always called alcohol truth serum. They start nagging and complaining. The truth comes out of your mouth instead of staying in the back of your head where it belongs. You know, a lot of drinks makes loose lips. And, you know, you call them the names they don't want to hear. And that leads on to other arguments. One day, I did go to marriage counseling one time. And the counselor said, before you say anything stupid, just walk away. Well, I did that one night. I walked away, went to the bathroom in the master bedroom, closed the door, and she comes stomping in there, thought I'd lock the door and kick the hole in the door. What the hell did you do that for? All I had to do was twist the knob. Now I got to replace the door. Never mind. I walked away because I didn't want to argue with you. And I'm walking away again. So, and I'm waiting for somebody to come up with an app on your phone that sounds like the old phone hang-ups. So instead of just pushing in and calling, it goes dead. I want to hear. I want them to hear that receiver going down on the trail. Very loudly. Because, when my son was back in my life, his mom would call and start pitching and complaining about something. I'd just push in, call, and that would have been so fun to have that on there. And then she'd text it, you just hang up on me, and I just put delete. I don't want to have to stoop to her level of conversation anymore. Ever since I got into this program and did the steps, I can't remember last time I argued with anybody except my son, because, you know, kids can do that to you. But, you know, I don't argue with people. If they want to start arguing, I'll just turn around and walk away. If they keep arguing, they're schizophrenic. And I don't worry myself about shit. You know, especially in the beginning of the program, what I thought was trouble come up, and, you know, and that's what I love about turning it over to God, is I pray about it. The next day I wake up. Most of the time I don't even have to do a damn thing because I was making a freaking mountain out of an anthill. But you know, it wasn't a problem to begin with. In my mind, I was making it a problem. You know, and that's what I like. After I do my inventory before I go to sleep, and then, you know, if there's something troubling me, I give it to God, ask him to tell me how to handle it the next day. You know, next day I wake up, put a smile on my face, and it's handled. I don't have to do anything, or it's just something very minor. There is a lot of power in prayer, so you have to watch what you pray for. But I pray for patience and tolerance to stupid people all the time, because like I said, I drove a truck for a living, and my road rage was out. Outrageous. You get so many stupid people out there. But after After I'd been here for a while, I was taking my mother back and forth to Fresno when my dad had a stroke, and then I took her to an appointment in Visalia one time. We were coming on that 198-99 interchange to get back to Tulare, and there was a truck about a quarter mile ahead, and I think you missed every gear trying to downshift to get around that turn. And I said, "Dang, what'd you do? Miss every gear? I have to put it in first." And my mom, "You yell at everybody?" He said, "Oh, this is a lot better than what I used to do." I'm kind of glad I did drive truck, because I was taking her back and forth to Fresno to see my dad when we'd go visit him up there. You know, that J Street on-ramp heading north, it comes in on the pass lane. Well, I saw a 10-wheeler coming down that ramp, and I was in the slow lane because I saw him coming, but I also saw that he did not look in his mirrors once. So I was off on emergency lane on the road. My mom was about pooping all over herself. And he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "I knew he didn't see me, so I had to get out of the way." So, you know, I went around and we got back in the highway. And, you know, I'm just glad I was able to learn something when I was driving instead of just driving. And because it helps me to get where I'm going safe. But, you know, there's always people around that try to deter that stuff. I think I'm done. I'm going to cut it off right there. I'm done. Jerry Alcoholic, thank you.
We're going to open it up for any questions that anybody might have.
I have one. Jerry, did you have a yellow car at one time? Did you have a run-in with a fire hydrant?
That was a white car.
Tell us that story. How
that? Okay.
It's a good one.
Yes, yeah. You know, I told you I always went into blackouts. Well, I was drinking at the infamous Behar's on K Street. And I called the infamous Behar's because a lot of us drunks in Tulare drank there. Well, I went into one of my blackouts. I had a white El Camino. Yeah, it had yellow paint on it. Fire hydrants are yellow.
Oh.
Pay attention to the story, man. Well, you know, I had left there in my blackout. And I don't know, must have been halfway home or something. My blackout went to a brownout. My car was pulling to one side or the other. I don't remember which one. I got home, got it in the garage, went upstairs, went to bed. And the next day I woke up. Was I dreaming that shit? That really happened. So I go downstairs, open the garage door. Yeah, there's all kinds of yellow paint and a smashed left front quarter fender on that car. I hit that thing pretty good. And I never knew what the hell I hit for a while. And after I'd come to a little bit more, it was a little bit more coherent. I got on my motorcycle and went up and down every street I could think of trying to find something yellow I could have hit. Couldn't find anything. Well, about a month later, I was at Behar's again drinking a beer one afternoon. The bartender was in there. "Yeah, you should have been here last month. Some stupid son of a bitch in a white car ran over the fire hydrant across the street, lost her water pressure, and had to shut down early." Finished my beer and said, "I gotta go." But I found out what it was. I almost damn it tried to kill me a few times. April 12th, 1988. Left Behar's again in a drunken stupor. Got to Tommy's, left there. This is before the Foster Freeze had moved, where it's Triangle Burger now, I think. I was coming around that curve, and I don't know why, how, or what, but my bike ended up in the fence, totaled, and my body ended up against a light standard, falling to the ground, and came near totaled. I found the article at home, and I guess they arrested me to obtain a VA, but nothing ever came of it. But I was out of work for 4.5 months after that one, because I broke my arm, broke my leg, ruptured my spleen, and I was in all
I jacked myself up pretty good, so I was out of work for a while. I'm glad. I don't know why they never did anything about it. Maybe they thought I was going to die, but I fooled them. I was able to drink longer. You know, all the mishaps, drunken crashes and everything I've been in, you'd think that would make somebody want to quit drinking or get sick all the time, blacking out. But Milo was when my son was taken away from me. He was only six at the time, and I still had to teach him to hunt, fish, and golf. So when I got him back, you know, we got fishing and golfing done. But before I could get him anywhere to hunt, he joined the Marine Corps, and so they taught him how to hunt. But I think he still missed because I can outshoot him. But he's in the Marine Reserves now, and he's doing pretty good. He saw what I went through. He listens to what I say about, you know, those one-liners and stuff, you know, pray about it, give it to God and everything. He used to be on the phone once in a while, and I could hear him giving his friends these one-liners over things that are going on in their lives. And, you know, it proves to me that he was listening. But every once in a while, he'll go out, especially Marine Corps ball night. He'll just get shit-faced. And luckily, he stayed in the hotel that night. Well, a couple months ago, he went to a friend's engagement party. His girlfriend brought him home. They were both living there at the time. And she goes, "Want to see what your son's doing?" So I got off the couch from watching that movie, went back. He was praising that porcelain guy. He looked miserable. And, you know, what was really fun is I just looked in there, saw what he was doing, and gave him a, attaboy, Luther! I get a nephew dad back from him, and I just kept laughing, going back to the other room and finished watching my movie. The next day when he was coherent, I thanked him. I said, "Oh, by the way, thank you." He said, "For what?" "Showing me where I never want to be again." "You're welcome, but don't say it so loud." Okay, more questions. They spur memories. Come on, get a good one.
Well, I have another experience.
Okay.
All right. There was a graduation or a end of boot camp where your son was, and his mother and you, and there was a spiritual principle that made itself available to you.
Okay. When my son graduated from boot camp, I was up in front, and they call it a fun run. I don't know what's so fun about running. But they were done. They were lined up in front of where we were. And I was, you know, joking with the guy that I just met beside me. And, you know, the drill sergeant was up there. "If you want to know how your son did, we'll be over here at the restaurant. You can ask anything you want to." And I was just joking with him. "Maybe I don't want to know." And his mom had snuck up behind me, and I didn't know it. She goes, "He's braver than you'll ever be. Isn't that bigger than yours ever thought of being?" It just went on and on and on. And thanks to this program, I did not make a fist. I did not turn around and acknowledge her. I just stayed there, looked forward, and kept my mouth shut. And her husband actually stepped and said, "Knock it off." And then I saw the other guy after that was all done. And, you know, we started discussing things, and I said, "And she's just the C word." He goes, "Well, you know what that means, don't you?" I said, "No, what? You know, I've heard 'see you next Tuesday' and all this other stuff." He said, "Can't understand normal talking." And, you know, it seemed like when I thought about it, that word was in the back of my mind. Every time she didn't understand what I was trying to tell her in English, I wish I knew Spanish, maybe she would have understood it better. But you know, when they don't listen, when we don't listen, especially her, you know, a fight ensues. And that's only because I guess that was not her day for English. Any more, Matt? You're on a roll.
That just a suggestion to be reserved with pen and tongue. Lock your mouth and watch out, right? Social media.
That. Yeah, that's why I don't do social media.
Thank you, Jerry. That's all.
Yes.
What's the most difficult thing you have faced in your sobriety and having to use the program to get through it?
That's a good one. I'm going to have to ponder that for just a moment. Okay, I think the most difficult part is remembering to do your meds and prayers every day. That's been my most difficult part. Everything else just seems to come natural. But if I don't do my meds and my prayers daily, if I'm gone somewhere for a few days and I forget to take my books with me because I don't look them up on the phone because I don't do that shit. I was born PC. That's before computers. Thank you. I would say that's the time that's the hardest for me. Cause it's like when I took a road trip after I retired, and you know, it's a simple little thing, but I got very upset about it because I wasn't praying and doing my meds. I did take my books with me, but I wasn't reading them every day. I was heading back towards Idaho, and my maps thing just started going haywire and stuff. I finally made it where I was going, got to the KOA campground in Oregon after I stayed in Idaho for a little while. I was very pissed off, just turned off my phone, threw it in the car, went to sleep. Well, the next morning I decided to wake up, I turned my phone on again, and everything was working fine. And that's when I remembered that at one time I was told these smartphones, you have to turn them off every once in a while for at least 10 minutes to let them reboot. And that Google bitch is probably tired of talking to me, so she's going to watch this. So, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's good when you can thank God for your mistake, because he's just showing you how stupid you are. Like one time I was digging in the bottom of a closet and had the power converter balanced on a board in the closet. It went to the, router. That's what it is. And I was looking for something, and I was in a hurry, hit that board, pulled that converter off, that router came down, split my head open. So, you know, I finally got the bleeding slowed down. I was surprised I didn't drop. I did not put a drop of blood on the carpet or the floor. But after I got it settled down and everything, I actually thank God for showing me I don't have to be in a hurry to find shit. I'm retired. It can wait till tomorrow if I have to. You don't have to get in a hurry for anything. And that's turning everything over to God. He gives you opportunities. You know, some people call them tests. I call them opportunities. I think he gives you opportunities to see how you're going to handle it, how your spiritual condition is that day. Okay?
Hey, Jerry.
Yes?
Is there anything that you might have maybe brought into your sobriety that you thought, maybe a situation or something from the past that you were just convinced there was no way to resolve it? Maybe in a minute, there was just no way to be positive any situation like that that you just felt like was too big, that you have found a way to get through?
I pretty much made amends for everything while I was drinking. There were a couple before I even started drinking that were real big and stuff. But I do these dailies out of a reading from a church I visited one time. And you know what it says? If you cannot physically make your amends to somebody because of situations that arise, either they're dead or moved across the country or something, you don't know how to get a hold of them, write it in a letter, read it aloud to God, and burn it. Let the ash go to God, let it disperse it. And I love that part.
Yes.
My surrender was actually very easy because Like I said, I knew I was an alcoholic for a long time. I always knew I needed to quit. I just never knew what day that was going to be until I was taken back to court. And basically, when I received the papers before I even went back to court, I had my son get all the bottles off. He bring me the whiskey and tequila, and I committed that alcoholic sacrament that I pulled him down the drain. I get something to drink. When I first got him back, he would come into the house feeling bad, ask him what was going on. I don't want to talk about it, but I always make him talk about it. One time he comes in, said, "What's the matter?" He goes, "Mom doesn't think you quit drinking." I said, "It doesn't matter what your mom thinks. Only three people got to know it. You mean a guy." "Oh, okay." And when he was younger, he was a lot more mature. I think the older he gets, the less mature he gets. I don't know why. Must be in the water or something. Dan, I need it. Thank you for your questions. It's very smart.